This week marks the 7th anniversary of one of the country's deadliest hurricanes. New Orleans and the Gulf Coast are still recovering from the devastating damage and loss of life caused by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, the storm that would follow. What the disaster also revealed was the steadfast determination of so many residents to not forsake the Gulf Coast and to rebuild, in some cases, by any means necessary. Writer Daniel Wolf witnessed that effort, traveling to New Orleans regularly over half a decade. He writes about what he saw there in a new book, The Fight for Home, How Parts of New Orleans Came Back. And we welcome Daniel Wolf to the roundtable. Daniel, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry it's so timely.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I want to start with that before we get into some of the subjects in the book. I mean, well, you can't avoid one of the main subjects of the book, which is this want and need to rebuild. But as we just heard from NPR headlines, this is an area that is prone to hurricanes. What is the sense of that you get from people of them being wired for this happening, the potential of this happening every hurricane season?
Well, it's a complicated question. I mean, I think people obviously know where they live and know the dangers and, you know, possibilities that are there. I was just down in New Orleans next week. I went from there to Los Angeles area, and someone in the Los Angeles area said to me, you know, why do they keep rebuilding there? There's, there are all these hurricanes are going to hit. And I went, why do you keep rebuilding here? You got no water. You got an earthquake fault.
Right.
People pick their homes, and they grow very attached to them, and it means more than they can express, and they want to return there. They understand the dangers, but they want to be there.
So when it comes to, as you write in the book, the fight for home, and this is something that people want, that feel they need to fight for.
Absolutely. And, I would have your listeners put themselves in their place, which is that they've grown up there and their grandparents maybe have, and there is this disaster, but, they want to stay. It means a lot to them. And, the more I talked to people and the longer we were down there, the clearer it was to me that part of why they wanted to stay was the community, the people who are gathered in their block or their neighborhood more than anything else, and the feel of the city. New Orleans is a little unique, obviously, but I've run into that in lots of other places too. You build up a world and you want it to stay.
You went to New Orleans with Jonathan Demme, the film director, Oscar-winning film director, 5 months after Hurricane Katrina. What were you looking to explore in that very first trip?
You know, we were fat, dumb, and happy. We had no idea what we were doing. We went down because it was clearly a major event in 21st century America. We wanted to go and at least witness it. We went. Jonathan had a camera. I had a notebook. We rented a car at the airport, and we just started driving. We had a couple introductions, but basically nothing. And we'd drive in and see somebody working on their house and stop and talk to them and film them and take notes. And almost inevitably they'd say, yeah, this was terrible, but you should go that way, and point. And we'd keep driving. And eventually we got down to the Lower Ninth Ward and some other places that were key areas where the levees had failed. And a trip we thought was going to be one time, we decided, well, we'll come back every season. We'll come back 4 times, and then we'll have a kind of story about people coming back. But as we became friends with people, we realized that we had to stick it out till they actually got in their homes. And to our surprise, that ended up taking over 5 years until the last person we'd kind of focused on finally got back in their house.
Why did it take so long?
There are so many
different, obviously, as you illustrate in the book, there are many different stories, and everybody seemed to encounter something different. But were there real roadblocks in the way for true rebuilding and going back to your home that caused it to take so long?
One of the things that struck me was that three or four different people, after a couple years, said to us separately almost exactly the same phrase, which is, "I don't think they want us back." And they said it with some horror, and it wasn't clear who they were. But what was facing a lot of them, I mean, the American public watched the storm and watched the slowness of the government's initial response. Congress then passed a lot of money to help people out. But that money was incredibly slow in getting to people. Most people in New Orleans didn't get any federal relief funds until at least a year after the flood. And in most cases, those funds were at least $50,000 less than they needed to actually rebuild their home. And in the meantime, they were in a kind of limbo where they didn't know, not only didn't they know if they were coming back, but they didn't know if their neighborhood was going to make it. And as I said earlier, it was about community as much as anything else. We met a guy called Mike out in St. Bernard Parish, which is just outside of Orleans Parish, where the city of New Orleans is. And Mike worked incredibly hard all on his own, using his own money, and got his house back up within, I think, 6 months of the flood. And we went and visited him before and then after that, and when we found him, he was sitting in this beautifully redone home in the middle of desolation. And it occurred to him and his wife, Kim, that they had to have the whole community come back. As he said, we've got to come back as a family, because it was no good to be in his house all alone in the middle of ruins. It wasn't what they wanted. It wasn't what they'd had.
When one of the things that you explore in the book that I found fascinating is this, the question that comes up of how you're going to rebuild, in the sense of, do you want to return to what you had, or do you take this as an opportunity to reinvent? And it's a question that was a real struggle, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it you know, almost everybody, once they saw the city was flattened or drowned in this case, went, okay, now how do we start over? What do we want? And I think it's only natural that part of what they wanted was what had been there. But almost every organization, as well as the individuals, sort of said, well, what's the new New Orleans going to look like? For example, the Archdiocese, the Catholic Archdiocese, the floods came and they were already, their congregations were getting smaller, their expenses were getting larger. They were in the process of thinking about closing down some churches. So after the flood, they said, okay, well, that's exactly what we're going to do. We can't have all of these places up again. But then there was the decision of which churches got closed and which didn't. And we documented, among a couple of different fights over this, in most cases where an African-American church was going to be closed, even though it had a very vibrant congregation, and people were upset about that. So the Catholic Church tried to reshape how their world was going to look after the flood, and then the congregants and the other people in New Orleans said, well, wait a second, here's how we think it ought to be. And that happened, you know, in almost every department.
And what was right for them, one department wasn't right for the other department.
Yeah. Yeah, they varied.
And it would seem that so finding common ground and working together and having the same vision was very difficult.
Yeah, you know, it happened on the street level. It, apparently easily, but and amazingly to me, that, you know, within a block, everyone seemed to be cooperating. People who hadn't even known each other that well were suddenly helping out, getting rid of the rubbish, helping put a roof back on the house, doing that. It was more at the planning level, where there were top-down decisions made in an awful lot of cases where the people who had the strength and courage to come back, said, wait a second, that isn't the city we want, and that doesn't help us. I mean, one of the ones for which the jury is still out is public education, where when the flood hit, the schools were in bad shape in New Orleans beforehand, and the state took over the school system, fired everybody, 7,500 people, all the teachers, and started over again. And today, 80% of the kids in New Orleans schools are in charter schools. Now, that's something you see across the country, but you don't see it to that degree. And it was a move that kind of happened without catching people unawares, I guess I would put it. And I think the jury is still out on whether that ends up being a better New Orleans or a not-so-good New Orleans.
When you look at the subtitle of the book, which is How Parts of New Orleans Came Back, the parts that came back and the parts that didn't, what was the difference? What was the primary difference?
Well, again, the jury's a little out on that, but the worry that people had from the very beginning was, in one of our characters' words, that this would be a boutique city. That American cities' idea of prosperity now, in a tough economy, is catering to people with money and catering to tourists, especially in New Orleans. And so that the area around the river, which is the high area, which most visitors in New Orleans probably know best, the French Quarter and all through there, the business district,
right,
came back fairly quickly, comparatively quickly. The outskirts, where people lived, where the people who cooked for the tourists and cleaned their rooms and stuff, came back very slowly. And those were the people who more often than not said, they don't want us back. I think this is happening in American cities. It's happening in Albany and New York and all over the country, flood or no flood, which is that who comes back, so to speak, who has a possibility, are people who already have some money, and the people without money are in a serious position.
So with another storm looming, what is the vibe, do you think, of those other parts that have not yet come back? As you say, the jury is still out. Do events like this, and we hope that the storm goes off and doesn't come anywhere near this region and,
right,
and dies at sea. But does it have an effect on the conversation as to why some parts come back and others do not?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'll give you a kind of on-the-ground report on this, which is that Jonathan and I made a movie called I'm Carolyn Parker, which is going to show on PBS September 20th. And it's about this woman in the Lower Ninth Ward. And Carolyn evacuated for Katrina kind of under duress. Her niece had to come and haul her away. She left. She came back. Her house was in ruins. She couldn't enter it yet, so she had to stay away for a while. And as she stayed away, a lot of her stuff got robbed. And that happened to lots of people in New Orleans. It stayed open. When Hurricane Gustav came a couple years later, they asked for an evacuation, and she didn't want to go. And finally, they assured her the police would be patrolling the neighborhood. There was no problem. So she left, and when she came back, her FEMA trailer, which she lived in for 3 years till she could get in her house, had been broken into, and again, people had gotten to her stuff. And so what she and her son and her daughter vowed the last time I talked to them was they would not evacuate the next time. It didn't matter what the mayor or the governor said. If you left, people came and took what few possessions they'd managed to reaccumulate. So the last time I talked to Carolyn, it didn't matter whether Hurricane Isaac was coming or not. She wasn't going anywhere. That's a terrible legacy in a lot of ways of these hurricanes and of the government's inability to protect people and their properties.
Did we learn a lesson? Have we learned a lesson?
We're learning it. And I think the people in New Orleans are a model in a lot of ways and an inspiration, certainly for me, in that they say there are some things we believe in. There are some places we have staked our claim to. We're going to come back whether they want us back or not. And I think that lesson is bigger than any natural disaster. That's about sort of average Americans getting heard, and I think New Orleans is on the way back in that way.
When you say that we're learning lessons, I mean, it's 7 years. I mean, if we haven't learned, weren't there immediate lessons learned?
There were immediate lessons learned, but it is a slow, I mean, that's what, as I said earlier, that's what struck us, was that we thought this would be quicker. And I guess, I don't know, do we as Americans kind of think these problems will be solved quickly? I suspect so. This is the rebuilding of a city. I mean, you know, there are floods in upstate New York happen, and it takes a while for everybody to come back from that. This was even larger than that. And I think what's holy, why it's slow, partly is this problem of, okay, what kind of a city can we build? You got to remember that in the middle of this recovery, the national economy collapsed. The mortgage bubble burst. And the question of how people were going to hold on to their homes spread from New Orleans out to the rest of the country. People in New Orleans had to laugh a little when the newspapers kept saying, there are lots of people whose homes, thanks to their mortgages, are now underwater. Well, that rang a bell. So the comeback is slow, partly because I think as a country, we're not sure what direction we're going in right now, what kind of economy we want, how we want to treat our fellow citizens.
And for the people, and of the people that you write about, and as you return, there has to be residual bitterness that will never go away, and distrust that will never go away.
I think that's right, but it's interesting because it's balanced out. I think the distrust of the government, which was pretty high beforehand, as far as I can tell, and I find that everywhere, is even stronger. The people I talk to in New Orleans don't want to hear what the next plan of the mayor's is or the governor's. It's just, it's inconsequential. It has nothing to do with anything. They only make trouble. There's, that bitterness stays. The other side of that is that people who may never have been in touch with each other before and never relied on each other before, especially in the neighborhoods, have this memory and have this very strong attachment now. So the guy I talked about earlier, Mike, out in St. Bernard Parish, he was in an integrated neighborhood, and he flew a Confederate flag over his house. And that was a pretty clear signal of who he liked and who he didn't like, I think. By the end of the 5 years, his friends and his allies in coming back were a lot of the black people in the neighborhood. And that had changed. And something like that, whether it crossed racial boundaries or not, was happening in lots of places we saw. So I do think, along with the bitterness about especially the government, there's a real hope about people getting along with each other and on their own, kind of.
And what is fascinating about New Orleans, of course, as you've talked about and you write about in the book, is how eclectic the city is. I mean, you say, okay, well, this is New Orleans, but New Orleans is so multifaceted, which is part of its draw, it's part of its lure, but it's also ultimately what has caused so many of these discussions and slowness to take place.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Pastor Mel, another guy we followed, great guy who was a ex-crack addict, actually, who is now running a ministry for ex-crack addicts. But he talks about Haitian culture as New Orleans culture as a gumbo. And he says, my slip on Haiti is partly because I think New Orleans is kind of a city from the Caribbean, as well as it is a city of the Deep South. And there is this extraordinary mix I think it's more and more true in other American cities, but in New Orleans it's very hard not to know people from different cultures. You'd have to really work on it. To stay only in your own group. And that's a strength, and it's been a strength in coming back from the storm, I think.
Well, the name of the book is The Fight for Home, How Parts of New Orleans Came Back. It is published by Bloomsbury. Daniel Wolf is the author. As Daniel mentioned, you can also learn more about I'm Carolyn Parker, which is directed by Jonathan Demme, and you worked on this film as well.
Yeah, I'm one of the producers.
One of the producers of the film, I'm Carolyn Parker, which premieres on September 20th, 2012 on PBS. Again, the name of the book is The Fight for Home, How Parts of New Orleans Came Back. Daniel Wolf, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
The pleasure's all mine. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Fight for Home, How Parts of New Orleans Came Back. That's from Bloomsbury, and the film is I'm Carolyn Parker, directed by Jonathan Demme, which premieres on PBS on September 20th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.